You're back on Soil Matters. My name's Tanya. I pay my respect to our elders and Indigenous caretakers all across this planet, past, present, and future. So this is Soil Matters, and this is just a little get together to discuss all things soil in an attempt to recognize the privilege of humans in this wild ecosystem, this wild manufactured ecosystem. This radio show is an attempt to merge perspectives from physical sciences, social sciences, arts, and literatures. I'm originally from Western Sydney in Australia, land of the Darug people, and my pronouns are they, them. Yeah, I've been doing a PhD at the VU and I'm trying to make a really wonderful peatland model that can simulate greenhouse gas fluxes in peatlands, and it's actually looking really, really good. I think it's almost there. Probably on Monday, I can just sort of save the most finalized version and no longer have to go to the inside of the model anymore and just make some really interesting figures and statistics about what the model says, and then write a really wonderful journal article at the end. So, I just want to remind you of a quote that I really love. I've said it before on this show. It's by Professor Marsha Langton Am. And the quote is, "The world is run by those who show up." And just before this, I want to introduce the song, and it was Autumn by, I want to say the name of the artist is Filler, but it's spelt PHI double one, as in 11, the numerals A. So thanks, Filler, for that really awesome track. And today, we're gonna talk a little bit about, we're gonna talk about the IPCC report, which is AR6, which is just the sixth report that the IPCC has brought out. The first one was in 1988. We're now in 2021, more than 30 years on. And while the full report hasn't come out, the IPCC AR6 report, I believe, will have three sections, and we've only had the first section so far, which is the section from Working Group 1, and then there will be the report from Working Group 2 and the report from Working Group 3, and I believe both of those will follow next year. So Working Group 1 is a working group that looked at the physical science behind behind climate change, and Working Group 2 looks at the impacts of climate change. And Working Group 3 looks at the adaptations we can make and follow in regards to climate change. Like I said, the IPCC came out, and the key messages are still the same as they were in 1988. Isn't that hilarious that after 30 years, nothing much has changed in terms of the message, and nothing much has changed in terms of the actions? So, the key messages are climate change is measurable, and climate change has been measured and observed. The second point is that human-induced levels of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, particularly carbon dioxide, will cause a threat to the human way of life, and also the biosphere across this planet. And the third point is that reductions of greenhouse gases are needed to reduce the impacts and risks of future climate change. And then, but what has changed, I guess, is there's some more certainty on some of the conclusions of the report, and there's also a much higher urgency on all of the conclusions in the report. So climate change is more visible, and it is increasing intensity, and this is happening at a rate more than expected. So from what was projected in the 1988 report and the first few reports, climate change, the amount of climate change, the amount of global warming is actually increasing at a rate much more than was projected. We know that natural variability influences extreme events such as bushfires, such as heat waves, such as floods, and we are seeing more extreme events. There is now more water vapor today in the atmosphere, and this has led to more flooding. More warming has increased. Cyclones, hurricanes, and tropical cyclones. The reduction of greenhouse gases and decreased deforestation is necessary to curb these impacts. Changes will last hundreds and thousands of years. Sea level will continue to rise, glaciers will continue to melt, and sea ice will continue to shrink for hundreds and thousands of years to come. We are not heading towards the Paris Climate Agreement of 1.5 degrees reduction by the end of the century. We are also not heading to 2 degrees reduction by the end of the century, but we are heading towards more than 2 and up to 3 degrees of warming by the end of this century. This is not enough. There is not enough action being done to avoid food and water shortages. And there is not enough action being done to avoid negative impacts on the global economy and the global biosphere. There continue to be gaps in observational networks, and this impacts negatively on our ability to make weather and climate forecasts in those areas. And most of these areas are in poorer developing countries, often referred to as the Global South. COP26 is coming up in November, and tackling climate change is really, it really needs to be seen as a marathon. It's something that's got to be worked on consistently and with dedication and commitment over time, and it's not something that we can fix with a quick sprint at the last moment. So the IPCC report was utterly peer-reviewed. There are 200, well, and this is just the first section. So 234 authors contributed to this first section of Working Group 1. It includes 14,000 publications. Well, it includes the revision of 14,000 publications. These authors come from 65 different countries and received 78,000 review comments on the first draft of their work, excuse me. Each of those comments were addressed. So this is really a state-of-the-art climate report. It's really, really a fantastic read. Well, it's a very sad, depressing, angry read, but it's an excellent piece of work. So human-induced greenhouse gases are responsible for global warming. and human-induced greenhouse gases have warmed the atmosphere, the ocean, and the land. We can also say that almost all warming since the 1800s is human-caused. The report assesses the relative influence of carbon dioxide, methane, and other greenhouse gases on global warming. Human uses of greenhouse gases are responsible for global warming. But on the flip side, there are also aerosols that go into the atmosphere, which are small particles of dust, which are caused by humans, and these do cause some cooling, but not much. Hot extremes have become more frequent and intense, and this is extremely unlikely, and this would be extremely unlikely without the influence of humans. Human influence has been the main driver of ocean warming. Human influence has been the main driver of ocean acidification, and human influence has been the main driver of the reduction of oxygen in the oceans since the 1950s. Human influence is driving the global retreat of glaciers and has been doing so since the 1990s. And 40% of the Arctic sea ice, we've lost 40% of the Arctic sea ice since 1979. Climate change is affecting every region on Earth. Physical climate information addresses how the climate system responds to the interplay between human influence, natural drivers, and internal variability. Knowledge of climate response and the range of possible outcomes, including low likelihood, high impact outcomes, informs climate services, the assessment of climate-related risks, and adaptation planning. Physical climate information at global, regional, and local scales is developed from multiple lines of evidence, including observational products, climate model outputs, and tailored diagnostics. Natural drivers and internal variability will modulate human-caused changes, especially at regional scales and in the near term, with little effect on centennial global warming. These modulations are important to consider in planning for the full range of possible changes. The historical global surface temperature record highlights that decadal variability has changed and has enhanced and masked underlying human-caused long-term changes, and this variability will continue into the future with very high confidence. For example, internal decadal variability and variations in solar and volcanic drivers partially masked human-caused surface global warming during the 1990s, 2000s, from 1998 to 2012, with pronounced regional and seasonal signatures with high confidence. Nonetheless, the heating of the climate system continued during this period, as reflected in both the continued warming of the global ocean, which we can say with very high confidence, and in the continued rise of hot extremes over land, which is what we can say with medium confidence. Projected human-caused changes in mean climate and climate impact drivers, including extremes, will be either amplified or attenuated by internal variability, and we can say that with high confidence. Near-term cooling at any particular location with respect to present climate could occur and would be consistent with the global surface temperature increase due to human influence, and we can say that with high confidence. Internal variability has largely been responsible for the amplification and attenuation of the observed human-caused decadal to multi-decadal mean precipitation changes in many land regions, and we can say that with high confidence too. At global and regional scales, near-term changes in monsoons will be dominated by the effects of internal variability, and we can say that with medium confidence. In addition to internal variability influence, near-term projected changes in precipitation at global and regional scales are uncertain. because of model uncertainty, and uncertainty in forcings from natural and anthropogenic aerosols, and we say that with medium confidence. Based on paleoclimate and historical evidence, it is likely that at least one large explosive volcanic eruption would occur during the 21st century. Such an eruption would reduce global surface temperature and precipitation, especially over land, for 1 to 3 years, alter the global monsoon circulation, modify extreme precipitation, and change many extreme events. And we can say that with medium confidence. If such an eruption occurs, this would therefore temporarily and partially mask human-caused climate change. With further global warming, every region is projected to increasingly experience concurrent and multiple changes in climate impact drivers. Changes in several climatic impact drivers would be more widespread at 2 degrees compared to 1.5 degrees global warming, and even more widespread and pronounced by higher warming levels. All regions are projected to experience further increases in hot climatic impact drivers and decreases in cold climatic impact drivers. And we can say that with high confidence. Further decreases are projected in permafrost, snow, glaciers and ice sheets, lake and Arctic sea ice. And we say that with medium to high confidence. These changes would be larger at 2 degrees Celsius, global warming, or above than at 1.5 degrees Celsius. For example, extreme heat thresholds relevant to agriculture and health are projected to be exceeded more frequently at higher global warming levels, and we can say that with high confidence. At 1.5 degrees Celsius, global warming, heavy precipitation, and associated flooding are projected to intensify and to be more frequent in most regions in Africa and Asia, and we can say that with high confidence. North America, medium to high confidence, and Europe, medium confidence. More frequent and/or severe agricultural and ecological droughts are projected in a few regions in all continents except Asia, compared to 1850 to 1900, and we say that with medium confidence. Increases in meteorological droughts are also projected in a few regions, medium confidence. A small number of regions are projected to experience increases or decreases in mean precipitation, and we say that with medium confidence. At 2 degrees Celsius global warming and above, the level of confidence in and the magnitude of the change in droughts and heavy and mean precipitation increase compared to those at 1.5 degrees Celsius. Heavy precipitation and associated flooding events are projected to become more intense and frequent in the Pacific Islands and across many regions of North America and Europe, and we say that with medium to high confidence. These changes are also seen in some regions in Australasia and Central and South America, and we say that with medium confidence. Several regions in Africa, South America, and Europe are projected to experience an increase in frequency and/or severity of agricultural and ecological droughts, and we say that with medium to high confidence. Increases are also projected in Australasia, Central and North America, and in the Caribbean, and we say that with medium confidence. A small number of regions in Africa, Australasia, Europe, and North America are also projected to be affected by increase in hydrological droughts. And several regions are projected to be affected by increases or decreases in meteorological droughts, with more regions displaying an increase. Mean precipitation is projected to increase in all polar, northern European, and North American regions, most Asian regions, and two regions of South America, and we say that with high confidence. More extreme events across more regions are projected to change at 2 degrees Celsius and above compared to 1.5 degrees Celsius, global warming, and we say that with high confidence. Region-specific changes include intensification of tropical cyclones and/or extratropical cyclones, and we say that with medium confidence. Increases in river floods, and we say that with medium to high confidence. Reductions in mean precipitation and increases in aridity, and we say that with medium to high confidence. And increases in fire weather, and we say that with medium to high confidence too. There is low confidence. So, more research is needed, people. in most regions in potential future changes in other extreme events such as hail, ice storms, severe storms, dust storms, heavy snowfall, and landslides. It is very likely to virtually certain that regional mean relative sea level rise will continue throughout the 21st century, except in a few regions, with substantial geological land uplift rates. Approximately two-thirds of the global coastline has a projected regional relative sea level rise within plus or minus 20% of the global mean increase, and we say that with medium confidence. Due to relative sea level rise, extreme sea level events that occurred once per century in the past are projected to occur at least annually. What? At more than half of the tide gauge locations by 2100. I'm going to say that sentence again. Due to relative sea level rise, extreme sea level events that occurred once per century in the recent past are projected to occur at least annually. At more than half of the tide gauge locations by the end of the century. Relative sea level rise contributions to increases in the frequency and severity of coastal flooding in low-lying areas and to coastal erosion along most sandy coasts. Cities intensify human-induced warming locally, and further urbanization together with more frequent hot extremes will increase the severity of heat waves. Very high confidence. Urbanization also increases mean and heavy precipitation over and or downwind of cities, and resulting runoff, and we say all of that with high confidence. In coastal cities, the combination of more frequent extreme sea level rise events due to sea level rise and storm surge, and extreme rainfall river flow events will make flooding more probable. Many regions are projected to experience an increase in the probability of compound events with higher global warming. I say that with high confidence. In particular, concurrent heat waves and droughts are likely to become more frequent. Concurrent extremes at multiple locations become more frequent, including in crop-producing areas at 2 degrees Celsius above 1.5 degrees Celsius global warming. And that's said with high confidence. Multiple climatic impact drivers are projected to change in all regions of the world. Climatic impact drivers are physical climate system conditions, like events or extremes that affect an element of society or ecosystems. Depending on the system's tolerance, climate impact drivers are, and their changes can be detrimental, beneficial, neutral, or a mixture of each across interacting system elements and regions. The climate impact drivers are grouped into 7 types in this report, which are summarized also in the report. All regions are expected to experience changes across at least 5 of the 7 climate impact driving types. And now on to section C.3. We've already read A, B, and C. And now, well, we're partway through C. So, and now this is the doomsday scenario. Low likelihood outcomes, but very, very bad, serious, dangerous, difficult outcomes, depressing outcomes, horrible outcomes. This is what the report calls low likelihood outcomes, such as ice sheet collapse, abrupt ocean circulation changes, some compound extreme events, and warming substantially larger than the assessed very likely range of future warming. These cannot be ruled out and are still part of the risk assessment in this report. If global warming exceeds the assessed very likely range for a given greenhouse gas emissions future scenario, including low greenhouse gas emission scenarios, global and regional changes in many aspects of the climate system, such as regional precipitation and other climate impact drivers, would also exceed their assessed very likely ranges. Such low likelihood high warming outcomes are associated with potentially very large impacts, such as through more intense and more frequent heat waves and heavy precipitation, and high risks for human and ecological systems, particularly for high greenhouse gas emission scenarios. Low likelihood, high impact outcomes could occur at global and regional scales, even for global warming, within the very likely range for a given greenhouse gas emission scenario. The probability of low likelihood, high impact outcomes increases with higher global warming levels. Abrupt responses and tipping points of the climate system, such as strongly increased Antarctic ice sheet melt and forest dieback, cannot be ruled out. If global warming increases, some compound extreme events with low likelihood in past and current climate will become more frequent, and therefore will be a higher likelihood that events with increased intensities, durations, and or special extents unprecedented in the observational record will occur. The Atlantic meridional overturning circulation is very likely to weaken over the 21st century for all emission scenarios. While there is high confidence in the 21st century decline, there is only low confidence in the magnitude of the trend. There is medium confidence that there will not be an abrupt collapse before the end of the century. There is only medium confidence that there will not be an abrupt collapse in the ocean circulation before the end of the century. If such a collapse were to occur, it would very likely cause abrupt shifts in regional weather patterns and water cycle, such as the southward shift in the tropical rain belt, weakening of the African and Asian monsoons, and strengthening of the southern hemisphere monsoons and drying in Europe. Unpredictable and rare natural events not related to human influence on climate may lead to low likelihood, high impact outcomes. For example, a sequence of large explosive volcanic eruptions within decades has occurred in the past, causing substantial global and regional climate perturbations over several decades. Such events cannot be ruled out in the future, but due to their inherent unpredictability, they are not included in the illustrative set of scenarios referred to in this report. Okay, people, now we're up to D, which is titled Limiting Future Climate Change. So, since the previous report, estimates of remaining carbon budgets have been improved by a new methodology first presented in the first report. Updated evidence and the integration of results from multiple lines of evidence. A comprehensive range of possible future air pollution controls in scenarios is used to consistently assess the various assumptions on projections, future projections, of climate and air pollution. A novel development is the ability to ascertain when climate responses to emission reductions would become discernible above natural climate variability, including internal variability and responses to natural drivers. From a physical science perspective, limiting human-induced global warming to a specific level requires limiting cumulative carbon dioxide emissions, reaching at least net zero carbon dioxide emissions, along with strong reductions in other greenhouse gas emissions. Strong, rapid, and sustained reductions in methane emissions would also limit the warming effect resulting from declining aerosol pollution and would improve air quality. This report reaffirms with high confidence that the previous report's finding there is a linear relationship between cumulative anthropogenic carbon dioxide emissions and the global warming that they cause. Each 1,000 gigatons of carbon dioxide is likely to cause 0.27 to 0.63 degrees increase in global surface temperature, with a best estimate of 0.45 degrees Celsius. This is a narrower range compared to the previous report. This quantity is referred to as the transient climate response to cumulative carbon dioxide emissions. This relationship implies that reaching a net zero anthropogenic carbon dioxide emissions is a requirement to stabilize human-induced global temperature increase at any level but that limiting global temperature increase to a specific level would imply limiting cumulative carbon dioxide emissions to within a carbon budget. So between the period 1850 and 2019, a total of 2,400 gigatons of carbon dioxide, of anthropogenic carbon dioxide, was emitted. Remaining carbon budgets have been estimated for several global temperature limits and various levels of probability, based on the estimated values of, what was that abbreviation? Of cumulative, that's it, cumulative carbon dioxide emissions. And it's, okay, remaining carbon budgets have then been estimated for several global temperature limits and various levels of probability based on the estimated values of cumulative carbon dioxide emissions and uncertainties, estimates of historical warming, variations in projected warming from non-carbon dioxide emissions, climate system feedbacks such as emissions from thawing permafrost, and the global surface temperature change after global anthropogenic carbon dioxide emissions reach net zero. Several factors that determine estimates of the remaining carbon budget have been reassessed, and updates to these factors since the previous report are small. When adjusting for emissions since previous reports, estimates of remaining carbon budgets are of a similar magnitude compared to the previous report, but larger compared to methodological improvements. That being said, anthropogenic carbon dioxide removal has the potential to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and durably store it in reservoirs. Carbon dioxide removal aims to compensate for residual emissions to reach net zero carbon dioxide or net zero greenhouse gas emissions, or if implemented at a scale where anthropogenic removals exceed anthropogenic emissions, to actually lower surface temperature. Carbon dioxide removal methods can have potentially wide-ranging effects on biogeochemical cycles and climate, which can either weaken or strengthen the potential of these methods to remove carbon dioxide and reduce warming, and can also influence water availability and quality, food production, and biodiversity. Anthropogenic carbon dioxide removal leading to global net negative emissions would lower the atmospheric carbon dioxide concentration and reverse surface ocean acidification. Anthropogenic carbon dioxide removals and emissions are partially compensated by carbon dioxide release and uptake, respectively, from or to land and ocean carbon pools. Carbon dioxide removal, and I mean anthropogenic carbon dioxide removal, not that carbon dioxide removal which happens naturally by the land and ocean, but so anthropogenic carbon dioxide removal would lower atmospheric carbon dioxide by an amount approximately equal to the increase from an anthropogenic emission of the same magnitude. The atmospheric carbon dioxide decrease from anthropogenic carbon dioxide removals would be up to 10% less than the atmospheric carbon dioxide increase from an equal amount of carbon dioxide emissions, depending on the total amount of carbon dioxide removal. If global net negative carbon dioxide emissions were to be achieved and sustained, the global carbon dioxide-induced surface temperature increase would be gradually reversed, but other climate changes would continue in their current direction for decades or thousands of years. For instance, it would take several centuries or thousands of years for global mean sea level to reverse course, even under large net negative carbon dioxide emissions. Even if we were sucking out huge amounts of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, it's going to take thousands of years for the global sea level to reverse, for the sea level to go down instead of up. In the five illustrative scenarios, simultaneous changes in methane, aerosol, and ozone precursor emissions that also contribute to air pollution lead to a net global surface warming in the near and long term. In the long term, this net warming is lower in scenarios assuming air pollution controls, combined with strong and sustained methane emission reductions. In the low and very low greenhouse gas emission scenarios, assumed reductions in anthropogenic aerosols emissions lead to a net warming, while reductions in methane and other ozone precursor emissions lead to a net cooling. Because of the short lifetime of both methane and aerosols, these climate effects partially counterbalance each other, and reductions in methane emissions also contribute to improved air quality by reducing global surface ozone. Achieving global net zero carbon dioxide emissions is a requirement for stabilizing carbon dioxide-induced global surface temperature increase, with anthropogenic carbon dioxide emissions balanced by anthropogenic removals of carbon dioxide. This is different from achieving net zero greenhouse gas emissions, where metric-weighted anthropogenic greenhouse gas emissions equal metric-weighted anthropogenic greenhouse gas removals. For a given greenhouse gas emission pathway, the pathways of individual greenhouse gases determine the resulting climate response, whereas the choice of emissions metric used to calculate aggregated emissions and removals of different greenhouse gases affects what point in time the aggregated greenhouse gases are calculated to be net zero. Emission pathways that reach and sustain net zero greenhouse gas emissions defined by the 100-year global warming potential are projected to result in a decline in surface temperature after an early peak. Woohoo! D.2. Scenarios with very low or low greenhouse gas emissions lead within years to discernible effects on greenhouse gas and aerosol concentrations and air quality relative to high and very high greenhouse gas emission scenarios. Under these contrasting scenarios, discernible differences in trends of global surface temperature would begin to emerge from natural variability within around 20 years, and over longer time periods for many other climate impact drivers. Alright, so under the low emission scenarios, we can already see changes within the next 20 years. Emission reductions in 2020 associated with measures to reduce the spread of COVID-19 led to temporary, but detectable effects on air pollution and an associated small temporary increase in total radiative forcing, primarily due to reductions in cooling caused by aerosols arising from human activities. Global and regional climate responses to this temporary forcing are, however, undetectable above natural variability. Atmospheric carbon dioxide concentrations continued to rise in 2020, with no detectable decrease in the observed carbon dioxide growth rate. Reductions in greenhouse gas emissions also lead to air quality improvements. However, in the near term, even in scenarios with strong reductions of greenhouse gases, like the low and very low greenhouse gas emission scenarios, these improvements are not sufficient in many polluted regions to achieve air quality guidelines specified by the World Health Organization. Scenarios with targeted reductions of air pollutant emissions lead to more rapid improvements in air quality, but only from 2040 onwards. Scenarios with very low or low greenhouse gas emissions would have rapid and sustained effects to limit human-caused climate change, compared with scenarios with high or very high greenhouse gas emissions. But early response of the climate system can be masked by natural variability. For global surface temperature, differences in 20-year trends would likely emerge during the near-term scenario under Under a very low would likely emerge during the near term under a very low greenhouse gas emission scenario relative to a high or high greenhouse gas emission scenario. The response of many other climate variables would emerge from natural variability at different times later in the 21st century. Scenarios with very low and low greenhouse gas emissions would lead to substantially smaller changes in a range of climate impact drivers beyond 2040 than under high and very high greenhouse gas emission scenarios. By the end of the century, scenarios with very low and low greenhouse gas emissions would strongly limit the change of several climate impact drivers, such as the increase in the frequency of extreme sea level events, heavy precipitation and pluvial flooding, and exceedance of dangerous heat thresholds, while limiting the number of regions where such exceedances occur relative to the higher greenhouse gas emission scenarios. Changes would also be smaller in very low, would be smaller in very low compared to low emission scenarios, as well as for intermediate compared to high or very high emission scenarios. Hoopah. So, that was the technical summary, I think. In a stable climate, the amount of energy that the Earth receives from the Sun is approximately in balance with the amount of energy that is lost to space in the form of reflected sunlight and thermal radiation. Climate drivers, such as increases in greenhouse gases or aerosols, interfere with that balance, causing the system to either gain or lose energy. The strength of the climate driver is quantified by its effective radiative forcing, measured in watts per square meter. Positive effective radiative forcing leads to warming, and negative radiative forcing leads to cooling. That warming or cooling in turn changes the energy imbalance through many positive or negative climate feedbacks. And attribution is the process of evaluating the relative contributions of multiple causal factors to an observed change in climate variables. And those climate variables can be things like global surface temperature, global mean sea level change, or to the occurrence of extreme weather or climate-related events. Attributed causal factors include human activities, such as increases in greenhouse gas concentrations and aerosols, or land use changes, or natural external drivers, and in some cases, internal variability. Changes in the climate system resulting from past, present, and future human activities will continue long into the future, from centuries to thousands of years, even with strong reductions in greenhouse gas emissions. Some aspects of the climate system, including the terrestrial biosphere, deep ocean, and the cryosphere, respond much more slowly than surface temperature to changes in greenhouse gas concentrations. As a result, there are already substantial committed changes associated with past greenhouse gas emissions. For example, global mean sea level will continue to rise for thousands of years, even if future carbon dioxide emissions are reduced to zero and a global warming halted, as excess energy due to past emissions continues to propagate into the deep ocean and glaciers and ice sheets will continue to melt. The concept of risk is a key aspect of how the IPCC assesses and communicates to decision makers about the potential for adverse consequences for human or ecological systems, recognizing the diversity of values and objectives associated with such systems. In the context of climate change, risks can arise from potential impacts of climate change as well as human responses to climate change. Working Group 1 contributes to the common IPCC risk framing through the assessment of relevant climate information, including climatic impact drivers and low likelihood, high impact outcomes. Alrighty, I think that's about it for me. I'm just gonna play a wee bit of Yard Act performing Dark Days. It's a dark day today. Thanks for listening to Soil Matters. Follow on Instagram, follow on your favorite podcast platform such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts, or follow on Mixcloud. Just look us up, we're Soil Matters. Thanks for listening. See you next time.